Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to your show, Destination Health. I'm your host, Kim Cockerhee. I'm a member of the Let's Truck team, and I just want to thank you so much for being here today. Joining together to say our health is important. Being healthy is the best decision you will ever make. It is worth it. You are worth it. So whether you're venturing on the trip for the first time or you've been at this thing called healthy living for a long time, we welcome you. So I hope you feel supported here. We learn from each other. We celebrate accomplishments, and we hold each other accountable, whatever you need. So that's all about, you guys. Just, you know, bringing people together, inviting people on the show to share what works. Share when you're maybe struggling, because you're going to on this path. You absolutely are going to at some point. Because we know there's somebody out there that has walked the same path you are in, or a challenge you might be in, and we can help. Okay, so that's what we're here for. So remember, we're taking your questions, and if you have a success story to share, we want to hear it. I love success stories because they keep me motivated, they keep me going, and if you have a challenge, we want to talk about it too. Okay, I'm not quite sure. You know, I won't say I have all the answers, that is for sure, but we know we will find out, and there's somebody out there that does. So press one and give a shout out and talk to Lisa if you want to come on the show. Okay. So looking back, weeks go by so fast. I cannot believe it. We are at the end of February, you guys. I mean, we were just talking about New Year's resolutions not too long ago. So, you know, how's it been? How has your week been? What victories? You know, what are you proud of that you want to do again? And what's something you want to be like, you know, I don't want to repeat that. It doesn't serve me. So identify those and just always keep looking forward, okay? So today our topic, and I love this, and I thank Kevin so much for bringing this topic to the forefront, Eastern versus Western medicine. You know, and I don't even really like using the term versus, because we're not putting one against the other. We're actually going to see how they complement and how there is a place for both. So we're going to chat about some pros and cons and learn a little bit about both of them, okay? So, I mean, basically, when you hear the term Eastern medicine or Western medicine, do you really know what that represents? Because I got to tell you, I didn't all the time. I'd be like, Eastern, is that here or is that the other side of the world? Western, vice versa, you know? So, you know, it's, even though it's around us every day, who steps back to really define what it is and put it in the right place in our head? So, again, this is another example of why I love us coming together for this, because it's a chance to learn. And more importantly, you get to decide how you're going to take back control of your own health. This would be the first place, by learning more, by educating yourself. Then you get to decide, based on your life, your health, where you're at, your experiences, you know, just your lifestyle, what may work and what does, what may work and what currently does work for you, because we are all so different. So I always want to plant that seed in your head, because, you know, we're all sharing different things that work, and you'll hear people say this or that, but it's up to you to decide what works for you, and I encourage you to try things, okay? I will never claim to be an expert, and I will never give you, you've got to do this advice. I may encourage it strongly, like put down that pop or cigarette, or how about let's go for a walk. But again, this is a learning atmosphere here, so come on board. Before we want to get started, I just wanted to share a little basic premise of what Eastern West is, and then we're going to expand on it more with Kevin. And so just a little bit of background, and this is just completely fascinating, you guys. So Eastern medicine, you'll also hear it called TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, or you'll hear alternative medicine. So I hear alternative a lot more nowadays. And it actually has its roots back to China over 2,000 years ago. And historically, all the practitioners of this, they kept very, very detailed records and charts that are honestly still used today. Isn't that cool? So one of its basic guiding principles is to dispel evil and support the good. So that means it's additional to treating illness. Eastern medicine, or, you know, alternative medicine, focuses on strengthening the body's defenses and enhancing its capacities for healing and to maintain health. It focuses on how the body systems are actually integrated, and that every body system, whether they're healthy or unhealthy, affects all the others, and vice versa. And we get that. And it doesn't just mean, you know, how the nervous system works together with the digestive system, how those might work together. Eastern alternative medicine, it also takes into account things like your emotional health, spiritual health. Again, it deals with the whole person. It just makes sense. Our bodies are healing, but to be honest, we get in the way. Health is more important than the absence of disease. You know, it's about feeling good and feeling whole. So you'll find this Eastern medicine just focuses on ongoing prevention. It actually encourages well visits. You know, it's interesting, we start that with the babies, don't we? Well visits, you know, well checkups and so forth, and we let busyness of life and a lot of times financial, you know, reasons get in the way that that we don't go there until it's time to address an illness. So on that side, then, okay, so Western medicine, that's more, it's fairly new in comparison to Chinese medicine, has its roots in Europe. And when you think of what most of us do, we think of Western medicine. You get sick, you go to the doctor. You get injured, you need surgery. That's Western medicine. It's chemotherapy, radiation, physical therapy, okay? That's practitioners of Western medicine are doctors, nurses, occupational, physical, or respiratory therapists, okay? So one of the pros of this is just, you know, the subject, you know, with all the rigorous safety and effective protocols that we have in place, okay? And they pass really strict review. So traditional in Western medicine, it intervenes once a sickness or a disease comes into play. And that's, you know, again, like what we do when our body, we get sick, we go to the doctor. It's so important. Western medicine, I'll tell you, and I know Kevin will share this, we talked about this before, you know, when your body is in crisis mode, you have a trauma that happens or an emergency, Western approach is life-saving, truly. When you need it now, and so beneficial for that. So with that, in my speedy little way of talking is a bit of background on Eastern Western, kind of give you an idea of the differences between the two. And I am just looking forward to getting on with this discussion today and so, so grateful for Kevin on board because this is so interesting, you guys. So get ready. We should say take notes, take a little note in your head and say, I want to learn more about this. Let's find where this fits in our life. So with no ado, let's head to Oregon and talk to Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hey there, Kim. Thanks for having me on. What a great open and a really comprehensive explanation of the differences. So first of all, thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you. I am so excited. The more I got reading about this, you know, it's just another, I think, just a way that we can take back control of our health by just learning a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I've been working on this a lot lately. Like, it's been my whole life because I've always been interested in a lot of this stuff, but the last 3 months have been really intensive. I'm not exaggerating when I said I have literally read thousands of pages of reports, and I'm going to talk about that, and I want to just tell everybody, you don't have to. In fact, you're going to be surprised what I found out by reading so many reports. But before I get to anything, I'm going to do something that I have never done in 8 years of doing live radio and podcasts, and people tell me I should do it, and I always tell them, hell no, I'm not going to. And what they want me to do, and even Sirius has said, you know, they get a little worried sometimes that I should have some sort of a disclaimer at the beginning of my show. You hear it a lot of times. If people are giving tax advice or financial advice or business advice, and that's what I do all the time, they say, you know, you should put out a disclaimer. And I say, you know what, give me 10 more hours on the air every week and I'll throw up a disclaimer to make you happy. But I don't have enough time now. I'm not wasting anybody's time and mine. I'm not worried about it. If they want to come sue me, my advice isn't going to kill anybody. It's not going to make anybody sick on my other show. They might lose some money. Big deal. You know, they'd lose a lot more money if they weren't listening. So I don't do disclaimers. On this show, I'm absolutely going to do some really strong disclaimers. I don't have the answers. It's not that I don't have all the answers. I honestly don't have any of the answers. And I'll explain why and what I mean by that. I don't want anybody to take this advice and think this is going to fix them. I don't want anybody to take this, any of the things I say, and think that it's the truth. and I'll explain why as we go along. And overall, you know, I really struggled. I have pages and pages and pages of notes about so many things that I want to talk about, but I don't want to overwhelm everybody. And I have a tendency when I get excited and passionate about something to dive in and overwhelm, and I forget that I have all this research that I've been doing, and everybody else might be starting from zero. So what I really want to do today is expand a little bit on the Eastern Western, not much because you did a great job, and then talk about what I think for me over the last 3 months have been some really, really big breakthroughs on how I'm now approaching health, me personally. And then I'll share some simple ideas that I don't think, you know, would endanger anybody. But again, you got to do this stuff yourself. I don't know if this stuff is true. And nobody does. That's one of the conclusions I've come to, is that a health thing is very, very different from what we do with money, what we do with trucks, what we do with so many other areas where we can usually pin things down and say, if you do this, this will happen. If you invest in this and the return rate of return is 6%, here's how much money you're going to have in 6 months and 30 years. We can do that. I can say, if you change your tire from this to this, here's how much your fuel mileage is going to go up. And I'm confident. In health, the more I read, the less confident I become about anything. So, and I'll get to a lot of those things, but the East versus the West, and I have some very personal experience with this, and I want to start off with Western medicine, and here's how I remember it, because I always used to get that confused too. Which one's which? Western seems to be much easier for me to associate with the United States. Country and Western music, Western novels. Mm-hmm. Spaghetti Westerns, that, you know, that word to me, I think of a lot of associations with the U.S. Eastern, I tend to really kind of think of the Orient, you know. So that's just a little trick on how I remember what it is. But basically Western, we're talking about North America and Europe. Those are the countries that tend to practice a more Western style of medicine. Eastern medicine, you mentioned Chinese, which is really where it got started many, many, you know, thousands of years ago, like you said. It also includes another really big group of Eastern medicine is Indian, like Ayurvedic is a huge influence on Eastern medicine. Ayurvedic is a very specific, they believe in some really, but it's that same type of let's keep you healthy. And we won't have to deal with the diseases. We don't want to just wipe out diseases. We want to stay so healthy we don't really have to deal with them. But because those medicines are so old, they really don't address trauma very well. That's just not their style. So the best thing I can say about Western medicine before I start bashing it like I'm going to, is to say that Western medicine saved my life, no question about it. When I was young and stupid, I crashed a motorcycle, and the impact was estimated at about 100 miles an hour. And they thought that a body can survive a 100-mile-an-hour impact is insane. But I had a couple things that I was so fortunate. The first one was the car that I ran into. He said he was going 30, and I hit him head-on, so they said I had to be going 70-plus at impact. He was a paramedic, and this happened out in the country, Roy, Washington, a little town that I used to live in when I was in the Army, and he literally saved my life on the street. He came back, stopped the bleeding, did all the stuff they were supposed to do, and it was kind of a cold, rainy night in the Northwest, like we have a lot of. He laid down on the pavement and pulled me up on top of him and laid there for 45 minutes till an ambulance got there to keep me warm and out of shock. Yeah. And I would have died. Yeah. Hard to talk about. Then the second thing, the Western medicine, and he was a practitioner of Western medicine, emergency trauma. The second thing was I was in the Army. We were close to the Army base. And at the time, Madigan Army Hospital was the number one rated trauma center in the Northwest, including all the private hospitals and everything. So they literally, not only did they keep me alive and save my life, but they did such a good job of putting me back together that I had, my hip was busted on both sides, separated on one. I had a lacerated liver and other internal injuries. My small intestine was damaged. I almost tore my leg off at the knee. You could literally see under my kneecap when it happened.
Dave.
And yet, today, as long as I stay healthy doing the things I'm going to talk about, I have literally no effects whatsoever. I don't, my hips never hurt. My knee doesn't bother me at all. No knee pain. I can run. I can do deep squats. No pain. It's pretty amazing. I had some digestive issues around it because of the damage to the small colon and the intestines. But as long as I eat right, some of the things I'm going to talk about, those symptoms also go away completely. So they did an amazing job.
When did that happen again?
Let's see. I was 20 years old. So I'm 51 now, so 31 years ago. And even then, I mean, that's, you know, the medicine back then, the trauma was still amazing. I mean, you know, 24 days later, the accident and the next 4 days in the hospital, I have no recollection of whatsoever.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital for a total of about 24 days. And it's just amazing that I literally walked out of the hospital after 24 days. And a couple of members of my family drove out from Ohio. And I got in a van with them, and we drove nonstop back to Ohio the day out of the hospital. You know, I was young and pretty healthy back then, doing a lot of physical lifting. Now, I went into the hospital at 180 pounds. I was doing a lot of heavy lifting back then and competing, and I came out of the hospital at 118 pounds.
Jeez, that way.
I literally, the 24 days, I had no solid food. Because I couldn't. But just amazing. So, you know, we have one of the best trauma and emergency care facilities in the world for things like accidents or heart attacks or strokes. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world. Now, to bash them because they deserve it. Western medicine does, in my opinion, virtually nothing to keep us healthy. That would be bad enough. But in reality, much of Western medicine and our pharmaceutical industry is making us so sick they're killing us. And there's a lot of ways they do it. None of it is intentional. It's a horrible system. Our doctors are, and actually I'm going to take a step back and put the responsibility back on us. I believe that if you look at what doctors originally wanted to do, they wanted to help people, they wanted to make them healthy, and over and over and over, people would go to doctors, and doctors would say, yes, you have the symptom, yes, I can help alleviate the pain or the discomfort, but you really need to change your lifestyle. We need to address the root cause, and most people just don't. They want to go to the doctor, they want to get a quick fix. And I think we were a big part of creating the system the way it is. And then the drug companies really took advantage of it and still do to this day. And the system is an absolute mess. And that's why we're all now so focused on health, because our health is so bad. And, know, the most of the drugs that are given to alleviate symptoms, if we did one thing, if we just stopped doing that, stop alleviating the symptoms, because the minute somebody goes in and they have heartburn, one of the most common ailments, you know what, I don't even know what heartburn feels like. Never had it in my life. I've heard it described, but I honestly don't know what it is. So, but it's a very common symptom. If the doctor would just let somebody suffer with it, they would be more motivated to fix the underlying cause. But when we medicate them, not only do we perpetuate the problem, many times we make it worse, and I'm actually going to talk about heartburn. So that's what I mean by they're not just helping us be healthy, they're actually making us unhealthy. And we have to take responsibility for that too. Because as individuals, we could just say, no, look, you know, I'm just going to live with the symptoms. Help me fix the problem. And doctors know how. They would have some ideas. I think they need to be trained much better in it. But most of this stuff is not rocket science. In fact, most of this stuff we can figure out on our own. Let me just touch on heartburn for a second. Heartburn and ulcers were always believed to be caused by too much stomach acid. But if you know the basics of how our stomach works, that makes no sense whatsoever. You understand pH for the most part, right? The higher the
right.
pH
mm-hmm.
number, the more
yep.
alkaline something is. And the lower the pH number, the more acidic it is. Yeah, me
right.
too. So we're trying to see if something is acidic or not, or if it's alkaline. Well, you know, we ferment vegetables. That's been a big topic lately. You know, normal pH water is, you know, the pH of water is up in the 5-6 range, pretty neutral. We like to get our ferments down under 4.7. That's when they're safe. They usually end up at about 3.5, which makes them a little acidic, and that's good. Your stomach acid is like 0.5. It is unbelievably corrosive. It is so corrosive that your stomach lining replaces itself about every 3 days, and it's been doing that your whole life. Because nothing could survive in that kind of environment. But that's what it takes to digest our food. So if our stomach is this acidic and it's always been this way, how can too much stomach acid be causing heartburn? That just makes no sense. And how could it be stomach acid that's creating ulcers when literally our stomach is being eaten up by this acid constantly? So it turns out we did figure out the ulcer thing. It has nothing to do with stomach acid and worry and anxiety like we always thought. It's a virus. There's an absolute virus. They put this virus in your body, you have a very good chance you're going to get an ulcer.
Wow.
Now, the good news is if we keep our... Go ahead.
No, I had no idea. I had no idea. So I want to hear what you say.
Most people don't. That's what I mean. We've been kept in the dark, and there's so much conflicting information, which I'm going to talk about. So heartburn, we've been told, is excess stomach acid. So what is the cure that we're always giving? An antacid to neutralize mm-hmm. the acid in our stomach, which now means we will not digest our food properly because it's not acidic anymore, and it's supposed to be. And
right.
We won't get the nutrients because it's the acid that breaks the food down into the things we can use. So we're immediately starting with a problem. Well, that's our second problem. Because our first problem is mm-hmm. digestion starts in your mouth. And most people don't chew very well because they don't
mm-hmm.
realize how important chewing
yeah.
is. That's what starts the whole digestive process, and you need to break your food down better so you don't put that heavy load on your stomach. Something simple as that. Let's go back to heartburn. Now we're saying it's acid, so we need to neutralize it. It's not too much acid. And this is known by a lot of people. Whatever happens, it happens because your stomach isn't acidic enough. So you have a flap in your throat, in your esophagus. It's not really in your throat. And that flap opens and closes to allow food in, but not allow anything back up through that tube in your esophagus. And it's the stomach acid that signals that to close. And if the stomach isn't acidic enough, it stays open, and the acid that you do have, it's still pretty acidic, works its way up your throat through that opening that should be closed, and that's what causes the burn. So we take an antacid, which makes our stomach less acidic, which ensures mm-hmm. that isn't going to close.
Right.
And so now it will perpetuate the heartburn, And we're not digesting our food, which is going to cause all kinds of other problems. One of the ways, and there are other reasons you can have heartburn, other medical conditions, but one of them is not enough stomach acid, and then we make it worse with all the remedies. One of the quick ways to test this, and it sounds so crazy, if you get heartburn, and when you get a bout, don't take an antacid or a Rolaids or any of that stuff, swallow a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar.
Mm.
And I know it sounds crazy. It's going to, like, my throat will be on fire, and I'm going to die if I do that. But if it works, then that tells you it's not some other medical condition. It's just your stomach isn't acidic enough. A nice, simple check. You know, we don't need to go to the doctor. It's not going to kill anybody to swallow a little vinegar. And if it works, then you know. Get rid of the antacids.
Right.
Don't ever take them again. And start eating things that will help your gut get right. Something so simple.
So what is it you think that somebody goes to the doctor? I'm sorry. If somebody goes to the doctor and they have a heartburn, and the doctor will say, you can either take this pill or you can take a tablespoon of this. What do you think majority of
no,
people
No, I've never
are
heard
gonna...
a doctor say that. I, yeah.
No, I know. But I just think about, you
right.
know what, our thinking is that we want that quick thing, you know, and we don't have the belief in this simple, simple, timeless, you know, remedy.
Right.
That
and you know one of the
better.
Reasons why we do it? Why we want the pill? One, because it's quick and easy. But two,
right. mm-hmm.
because the companies that make these drugs spend billions of dollars on commercials. You see
right.
the antacid commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are in misery. They take this pill, and all of a sudden they're on the beach, and life is wonderful.
Right.
That is a strong message that you've been seeing most of your life. So, of course, you believe this stuff works.
Right.
Nobody is spending
right.
any, you know, nobody's spending any money to tell you, hey, try a little bit of vinegar. So
yeah,
we got to go back
simple.
To we got to go back to the drug companies and look, they're in business to make a profit. I'm a capitalist. Knock yourself out. You're just not going to get the money from me until I figure out if I really need it or not. And you said something at the open. If we need a drug, something's wrong. Our body should not need any drugs whatsoever. It should need food and water. And any drug is a sign that something has gone wrong, and we need to look at the root cause of why, not just cover up symptoms. And I talk about this in trucks all the time. The shops are covering up symptoms. They're not addressing the root cause. So great analogy there on that. So many other diseases that we've been told are really one thing and they're another. What I want to do now is kind of talk about this breakthrough that I had and what led me to this. So I've studied this kind of stuff all my life, really intensely the last year and crazy intense the last couple months or so. And if I was trying to study a certain topic, like antacids or salt or what fat is better than others, I wouldn't read one report or two reports or 20 reports. I would literally read an average of 100 to 150 reports about each topic. Now, some of the reports might have been 20 pages. Some of them might have been a page on somebody's blog. Now, some of the reports were from the New York School of Medicine, the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, Harvard, Yale, Stanford. And some of the was from people like you and I, who have done some of their own
right.
research and come up with ideas. Some of it is from people like Dr. Weil, who's been doing, you know,
mm-hmm.
alternative
Love
type
him.
Medicine for decades. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Dr. Mercola, somebody who, how I missed this guy for all these years. I just found him like a couple weeks ago. How I missed him is just beyond me. And when I first looked at his website and I read what other people were saying about him, I thought, wow, this guy's a quack. That was really, he's not. He's a little out there, but only because we haven't been exposed to this stuff before. This guy does
right.
more research. I can see it in his writing. I can see he treats medicine the way I treat trucks. And people say, but he's just selling a bunch of products. Well, yeah, people say that about me too. And you're right, we are. We all have to make money. He doesn't take sponsors at all. He has products and he sells them, and that's how he funds all this research and he makes some really high quality products as well. But of course, he's out there. He's got like 14 million viewers on his website, and he is going to get bashed. Now, I don't follow the guy blindly, but what I have done is realize I think this guy really cares. He doesn't have all the answers. Nobody does. That's the other thing I found with all this reading. But I think he really cares, and I think he's really trying to find the right stuff. And I hope he gets extremely wealthy from it because he's helping a lot of people. I now kind of made his site my first stop now. If I have a thought, something I want to know about health, I really go to his site first because every topic I can ever think of is on his site. They have like, I don't know, 13 million articles or something. It's insane. And they put up 5 new articles every week or every day or something. Can't even keep track of it. So what I found in all this reading was the more I read, the more confused I became on almost every single topic, even things that I thought we knew for sure. The more I read, the more confused I became, because you could literally read a report from Harvard. I mean, we have to respect Harvard. And it would say one thing, and they had all these statistics and all this stuff to back it up. Then I'd go read the exact same topic from the Mayo Clinic, and totally different results, literally contradicting each other. And then I would go read a report from the top doctors at Stanford, and I'd get something totally different from the first two. And you really, the more I read, I was almost becoming depressed. How am I ever going to figure this out if the top people in the country can't even agree on this? And then you'd have somebody who has no background. They're just writing a blog somewhere, and they'd have something totally different from everybody else. So I thought, this is almost hopeless. And I thought, I have to figure out a way to come up with, I don't want to just be paralyzed because I don't know what to do. So how do I come up with a way to at least move forward and figure things out? And I tried a couple things, and they weren't making sense. And then I thought, you know, here's what we do in the financial world. If we want to test a theory, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Kevin, you know, I've done all this research. I can show you 15 reports why this works. You absolutely need to be invested in silver right now. And instead of just believing them or even believing all these reports, because guess what? I can go find 150 reports that say silver is the worst investment ever. It's always been. So it's just as confusing. But what we do to clear things up in the financial world is we do something called backtesting historical data. So we backtest this. And the way we do that is we say, okay, if silver is supposed to be so good, let me go see what would have happened if I would have started investing in silver in 1970 and I bought this much silver every year. And then we can work forward, and all the data is available to do this. There's software today that does it. And we can see what would have really worked historically. We can do that with stocks, with bonds, with real estate, with collectibles, virtually anything. And then some people will say, the people who don't believe in that or the people who are really trying to sell you something, they'll say, but you can't do that because things change all the time. Well, we can go back and look at historical backtesting, because in the 1930s, they were backtesting then, and they were backtesting to the 1800s. And guess what? They were right. They were accurate. And if we can look at it in the 40s, they were accurate. And literally at any point in history, backtesting of data like that isn't infallible, but it is absolutely the best way we have to know if something really works. So I thought, could I do this with health? Could I backtest ideas because nobody seems to agree on them? And one of them that I absolutely thought was a slam dunk, like nobody disagrees on this one, I'm sure, and that is the idea that salt creates hypertension in your body, high blood pressure. My mother had high blood pressure when I was young, so I remember her always not using salt. And so I knew that as a kid. And really, in all the research I've done, I don't ever remember anybody really arguing that point. It's like, this is just a known. Well, all of a sudden, just recently, I came across a couple articles, and they were kind of fringe, but then they led me to some, you know, medical institution articles saying, we might have this wrong. Maybe it wasn't the salt. There's a lot of variables here, and they were pointing at some other things possibly. And instead of getting bogged down in who's saying what, I said, let's try to back test this historically. So we've been talking a lot about fermenting vegetables, and we do it in a very, very salty brine. In fact, one of the things I've kind of been worried about is, you know, am I convincing people to go make all this really salty food and they have high blood pressure? That's the kind of stuff that worries me, you know, when I say this. So I thought, you know, I should put out a disclaimer. If you've got high blood pressure, you should stay away from this stuff. And then I thought, wait a minute. This is how we preserved food for thousands of years. Before refrigeration, it was the only way. We salt meat to dry it. We salt fish to preserve it. Anybody from the New England area probably understands what salt cod is. We literally took the fish and totally covered it in salt till it drew out most of the moisture and made sure that nothing bad could grow in there. That's how salt works.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you eat that stuff, you got to rinse it like 10 times in clean water just to get it to the point where it's edible, but it is still off the charts in salt. We salted cabbage to preserve it. We salted vegetables to preserve them. We literally salted our food to levels that today would seem insane. And yet, people didn't have high blood pressure back then. Nobody did. It was hardly even
right.
Known. People didn't die from this, and yet their salt intake was probably 4 or 5 times higher than ours today. So now I'm thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How could they have eaten all that salt all those years, and we didn't really start seeing high blood pressure numbers skyrocket until the 50s or 60s, and every year since mm-hmm. then, they've gone up and up and up and up. What changed? Well, there are only a couple possibilities.
Yeah.
One, the type of salt we use in highly processed food and what most people put on their food at the table is very, very cheap iodized salt. It has no mineral content. It's highly processed. We're putting things in it that I don't know why. Probably because we lost them in our natural diet somewhere along the way, like vitamin D. That's why it's in milk. So, you know, we used to use really highly mineralized salts, sea salts, gray salts, you know, salts that were natural and we did nothing but, you know, evaporate some seawater and use the salt that was left over. That's what most people in the world did. And thought, you know, that probably is a part of it. I'm sure it is, and you should always try to get the highest quality salt you can with high mineral content. I didn't think that was quite enough. So most of the new research is saying, look, one of the problems with all of the testing was that we really focus on people who eat a lot of processed foods. And processed foods are loaded with these cheap salts, but they're also loaded with sugars. And your body needs salt, and we've been using it forever. But sugars are kind of a new thing. You know, we didn't really do much with sugar back then. And now, all of a sudden, because we took out the fat from most of our food, because we thought the fat was bad for us, we had to replace it with something, and we had to replace it with something to make things mm-hmm. taste good. So we replaced it with sugars. Now,
yep.
even some of the top experts are saying, you know what, we really think it's the sugar, not the salt. Well, would that change a few things if we really found out that it was the sugar and not the salt? My God, how many people have died because we got this wrong? How many people have been eating the absolute opposite of what they should have been doing? Now, I do not want anybody to go out and start eating a bunch of salt. Nobody. You need to talk to your doctor. But let me warn you about this. Every time I talk to a Western doctor about stuff like this, they look at me like I'm an idiot, and I swear they're going to kick me out of the office, and they tell me there's no proof of that, and that can be very frustrating trying to talk to Western-trained doctors about things like this. You might want to look for a naturopath, and we were going to have a naturopath come on and explain what they were, but I had so much information that we'll do it another time. Naturopaths are Western-trained doctors. They do go through virtually the exact same training as an MD. They can do just about everything an MD can, including write prescriptions. They can't do surgery, one of the few things they can't do. But they're very, very close in training and background. But they tend to practice more Eastern-type philosophies. They look for natural remedies first. They help people make lifestyle changes to become more healthy. They look for herbal remedies. They believe in things like that yoga is actually a medical practice, not just a fitness practice, because earlier you were using the word whole a lot, the whole body. And there's actually another term, holistic medicine. Holistic medicine means that all of this stuff works together, your mind, your emotions, your exercise, your environment. All of those things are part of this, and naturopathic doctors will try those processes first. They don't just immediately prescribe drugs to cover up a symptom. So I highly encourage people to go look for a naturopathic doctor. Doesn't mean they're great. It's just another alternative. You still have to do your due diligence. You still have to, you know, find somebody you know, you think knows what they're doing and do some, you know, do the background and all those things. So I know I've gone on and on and on and on. I know you probably have some things to say. And
I so valuable. And this is what that whole naturopathic doctor is, that this is the time to look for that. And you can search online for ones in your area. It's the time to do it when you're not sick and you're not going to a Western doctor to, you know, the doctor to get the antibiotic or something, because that is still so, you know, in certain situations, it is a must. That's why they complement each other. I went to a person myself, and I did find one that's here in Akron that I'm going to call and check about, because it's that when you are feeling good that we want to go search this out and see what it might do for us.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to look at other possibilities. We need to look at things like even acupuncture. Yeah, it's been around a long time.
Right.
And it's a little out there for most people here, but for people in you know, in the Eastern world, that's just normal. That's not a big deal to them, and it makes sense. You know, here's the other thing that I have always been a big fan of is chiropractic. Most chiropractors train in Western medicine, so they understand the body from that viewpoint, but most of them practice more Eastern medicine. They look at healing and the alignment of the spine, because that's our central nervous system. Everything, all the messages in our body run through your spine. Your spine gets out of whack, puts pressure. It's just logical. You know, we still have most doctors will tell you that chiropractors are quacks, and they're not. My doctor, I was really, really fortunate growing up. I had a traditionally trained doctor who was a surgeon. He could do all that stuff, been to, you know, top medical schools. But his background, he was Indian. He also believed in Ayurvedic. He believed in chiropractic. And I got a little of all of that when I was going to him. I wish I would have listened more to it, but I was like the typical American, even as a kid. You know, just give me a drug. That's what fixes things. But now I look back and I see that he had such a much better approach, because he really believed in both. Like you said in the beginning, this isn't a versus. Both of them have such amazing things that they can offer, and we need to look at more of them that way. So a couple other, you know, big areas that I think are affecting people right now. And the one I had such a hard time with, and that was the idea of, you know, carbohydrates are so bad, we've got to get away from grains. And I fought this one. I fought it for a lot of reasons. One, I was afraid to give up my carbohydrates. I love pasta. I love French fries. I love rice. I love sandwiches. And I thought, that stuff can't be bad for you. Come on. You know, but I am grudgingly letting go, and mostly because of the results I've seen. But my first attempt at this, and most people's first attempt, seems to be Atkins. That was one of the big, you got to get away from the grains, you got to get away from the carbohydrates. And when I tried Atkins, it was an absolute disaster for me. I had never felt so bad in my life. I did understand that sometimes when you make radical changes in your diet, you can feel bad for quite some time. So
right.
I put up with it. I pushed through. And I'll talk about one you have to be careful of. But I pushed through. I need to, you know, try this. I had the worst headaches I've ever experienced. I had no energy ever. I was grumpy and irritable. And I tried it long enough, and I said, this is stupid. This doesn't work. But I made the wrong assumption. I made the assumption that cutting grains and carbohydrates must be a bad idea. What I've just learned recently is there was only one tiny little problem with the way most people interpreted Atkins. And part of it was Atkins itself, and part of it was the way we interpreted it. But when we got rid of the carbohydrates, and just to give people an idea, the average American diet is about 50% carbohydrate, and it should be 20 to 25, and it shouldn't be primarily from grains. Your carbohydrates should be primarily from vegetables. Vegetables have a lot of carbohydrates too. And some fruits are good. So when in Atkins, most people cut out the carbohydrates and replaced it with protein. And you would hear people say, I get to eat all the meat I want. I get to eat all the cheese I want. And there are two problems with that. Most people already get enough protein. The only people who probably don't are people who exercise heavily and work out, especially weight training. You do need to calculate
right.
your protein needs if you're working out heavy, but most people weren't, and they overdid the proteins, and the proteins they were using were really, really bad proteins because our beef in this country is a mess. Our chicken is a mess. Our eggs are a mess. If you're buying conventional stuff, our fish isn't good anymore. So two big problems, too much protein and horrible quality of proteins. What I've learned recently, and this makes so much sense, carbohydrates are energy. Protein is a building block. Why did we take away an energy source and replace it with a building block? That doesn't make any sense. We need to take away an energy source and replace it with another energy source, which is fat. But fat has been so vilified in our society that everybody wants to stay away from it. The problem is we've taught our bodies to run on carbohydrates, and we need to reteach them to run on fats. Now, I know I'm running really long, and I'm going to wrap this up on fats, but I want to make one analogy that I think makes a lot of sense. And we can even almost relate this to fuel in our truck. If we were to try to run our trucks on straight kerosene, and we even threw in a little gas to thin it out even more, we might be able to get the truck to run, but it would be really bad. We'd have no power. We'd be doing damage to the engine all the time, and over time, things would just get worse. But if we run it on a real good, high-quality fuel, then all those problems go away. We're strong. We've got power. So if we look at the difference, both carbohydrates and fats are energy. Our body can use them both. But let's look at which one probably is a much higher quality. If we were to take pasta, for example, or bread, and we tried to light it on fire, how successful would we be?
Right.
It doesn't burn, right?
Let's
take a step back, because we could say, well, that's because it's been processed and made into that. So let's go back to the plant. Wheat plants, rice plants, whatever. Let's say we go back to the plant, we dry them. Now we could burn them, but anybody that's ever started a fire understands how different fuels work. If you burn plant material, it goes up in seconds, and it's just gone. And you got to keep adding more and more and more just to keep an energy level. But what did we use to power our lamps for centuries? We used fat. whale blubber. You can burn, fat burns so beautiful. There's so much energy in fat. It lasts a long time. Our bodies are the same way. We can fuel it with carbohydrates and watch our blood sugar levels go crazy, which leads to so many other diseases. Or we could fuel with fat, good high-quality fats, and we have loads of energy that lasts. And once our bodies learn how to burn fat for energy, it stops storing fat as fat. When we teach our body to burn carbohydrates, then it doesn't need to use the fat for energy, and it has to do something with it. It stores it. And that's how we get fat. But we assume that if you eat fat, that must make you fat. It really doesn't. So that's, and we would really like to stick to more plant-based fats first, avocados, nuts. Some of those things are excellent. Macadamia nuts are amazing. They've been vilified. You shouldn't eat those because they're high in fat and high in salt. Guess what? Those are the things we're probably missing in our diet. But we've got this so wrong. So look for good, high-quality oil. Now, here's the thing. I could go on 2 or 3 more hours on how you get your body to stop burning. And this is something you can't do overnight. You've got to take a lot of time to make this happen, and it would take me a long time to explain it. Maybe we'll do a whole show on just that topic. But each one of these topics, whether it's salt or sugars or fats, there's so much out there and we're getting it so wrong. And then we overcomplicate it, which I did by reading all these reports. And all we really have to do is use a little common sense, back test it historically, and then more importantly, try some, start learning to listen to our body. What works for you? Because what works for me might not work for you. You might have to tweak things, and there is no one-size-fits-all. So that's kind of my overall lesson is sometimes you need to forget everything you think you know or what everybody else thinks they know, and we need to just get back to basics. We don't really need to overcomplicate this stuff. What do you think?
No, I agree 100%. I agree 100%, and I think I heard you talked earlier about that. It paralyzes people when you go to research things and you hear from somebody that's, why are you doing this? You know, that won't work and so forth. And you have to kind of, you know, read it with a grain of salt and try it and see what works. I know we've talked about, you know, that whole thing you're talking about with the low carb and the higher fat there. And you'll get somebody that will raise the question on that, you know, the whole, oh, my gosh, China Study, the book China Study with Dr. He's out of Cleveland. I can't think of him. They are protein plant-based and no fat, except for avocados, the good fat, but the percentages is lower than what you're talking about. There's a whole endurance group of runners now that are low carbohydrate, and they make their bodies, they call it adaptability, so that it burns fat while they're running, and they can actually, they don't have to do, and that's where we're marketed too, you know, the proteins like Gatorades and Goos, you know, the liquid carbohydrates to give you that fast, quick sugar, where if we let our body do our work, that's what you're talking about, with let it burn the fat for energy. There is just so much. And I hope maybe we can, would you be even up for continuing a conversation next week and talking a little bit more about Eastern and Western?
I'd love
to. Is that
to.
A possibility?
Yeah.
That would be great.
I'd love to.
Yeah, because I think, and you're, you know, the stuff you're finding out and especially experiencing, I love the whole back test thing. I had never heard about that. Absolutely fits when you're talking about Eastern medicine. We're talking 2,000 years, you know, of this documented stuff. But I'd love to talk more, too, about, you know, Eastern and getting people to think, doing the proactive stuff now. You know, we're talking, we get people on the show that have success stories, you know, great success stories. That when they've hit, you know, the bad DOT exam or something like that, and they're going forward, and now they're at this healthy spot, we want to keep them there, you know, or the people that are already at that spot, keep them there, and let's get proactive. I know personally myself, and a lot of it's financial, too, to go to well checkups or to do acupuncture or chiropractor. Now, those are two things, actually, that are most of the time covered by insurance. Those particular ones are. But there's some things that I think we can talk about and learn about that we can start a lifestyle that will prevent us, help us not to have to go through a regular doctor and grab a pill or something to get that quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things I don't want to do, I don't want to tell people you have to do this. I don't want to tell people this absolutely works. I don't know those answers. What I do know is this approach and the back testing idea. You know, I'm usually not all that creative. Most of the stuff that I teach is stuff I learned from everybody else, but this is an idea I didn't find anyone else. I actually, after I thought about it, I even went and looked, and I never found it anywhere. But it seems to make sense, and it seems to help me clarify some of these ideas without going through this argument about, but this report has 80,000 participants in it. It lasted 20 years, and this hospital tested this, and none of it makes any sense to me. And looking at it this way, and we don't have to go back very far. I mean, we can go back just a couple generations and see that our close ancestors, our relatives, people we probably knew, our grandparents and our great-grandparents, if they lived on farms, they probably ate what we consider to be one of the worst diets right now, high in fat, high in saturated fat, and high in salt. But very low in sugar, virtually no processed foods. They grew their own vegetables. They raised their own animals. They ate their own eggs. And yet we had health challenges back then, no question. And that's the part of Western medicine that if we can take the good stuff that's happened over the years and then go back and say, okay, but where did we go wrong? Then I think we can reach levels of health that we can't even imagine. One of the things I wanted to talk about today, but it'd be another idea. Anybody remember Jack LaLanne?
Oh, right. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Go back. That guy was absolutely amazing.
Right.
At like 80 years old, he was swimming in the open ocean, handcuffed, pulling 11 boats with 70 people inside the boats, and he would swim for a mile in under an hour. It's like superhuman stuff. But guess what? You go back and look, and what he was doing is exactly what I'm talking about here. He exercised
right.
a lot, and he ate whole foods in their natural state. That's really
back
about
to basics.
All he really did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it really is.
I was so frustrated and so worried that this is so complicated, nobody could ever figure this out. And then the breakthrough came. This isn't complicated at all. We can cut through
yeah.
all of that and go back to the basics. So I'd love
and I think
to
that
continue
give
on with this for as long as you'll have me.
That would be great because I think it'll give people some peace because I think we're all searching. And it can feel very lonely sometimes because of it, but it's an individual thing and no one of us is alike. And so, you can't do the thing like with finances or just like you do with talking with certain trucks or certain things that you can do, and it's not that way. But yet I hope people have a peace that it isn't as complicated as it might seem. And, especially if you're in a healthy state now, and even if you're not and you're dealing with some certain things, there is so much in your control that can get you to the best healthy self. So, yeah, Kevin, let's definitely continue this next week. And I know we didn't get to some questions out there, you guys. I'm sorry, but please come back next week. And I think, Kevin, if you're open for it, I would love to open up, some of the show next week so that we can do a question, do a back and forth and see what things people are dealing with and what things they've learned out there from doing their own research and all of us learn together. That would be cool.
Absolutely. And I want to throw something in. I certainly don't want to take over a show because I don't need to.
Oh,
you do an amazing job. But Lisa was kind of saying, the show's going to end. And this is something I guess we all need to learn about Blog Talk. Even though we scheduled the show for an hour and the British lady will come on and say 90 seconds and a minute, and then she'll say the show's over. The show isn't really over. You have another hour that people can still hear you. People can still ask questions. The only thing they can't do is if they're not already on the call, they can't get in.
Oh,
so
cool.
You don't ever, if you're at the end and you've got this, flow going and there's questions, you don't have to stop. You have a full hour after that the system will record. Everybody can hear everybody. It's only new calls can't come in. So again, totally up to you. But if you'd like to take a couple questions, or I will, or whatever, or we can just end it and pick it up next week.
No, I see there, learn something new. I love that. I'll tell you what, that is awesome. Do you guys mind? So I'm going to say, yeah, let's do this. Let's talk. I want to talk to some people and keep the discussion, because it might even bring up things that we can talk about next week too. So are you good to hang with me here, Kevin, too?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Okay, let's go here to New York. To John. Hey, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kim. Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Excellent.
Good.
What's on your mind?
I absolutely, positively love the subject today. And thank you so much, Kevin. I can't wait to go back and listen to the podcast and pick up all the stuff that I missed that you said, so I can take notes and start researching stuff that you said. It excites me.
Oh, and please go research this stuff. But just let me give one warning. There are some people, and I think you're one of them, that like research enough that you understand you're going to get 1,000 different answers, but you still want to know all those different viewpoints. And that's the way I am. I don't want some people to go get overwhelmed with all of the conflicting reports, though. So, you know, for anybody listening, if you start to read and things are feeling worse for you, you might just want to stop. It's so bad sometimes.
That's a good comment, because you can just keep reading on and on and on. But I'm like a sponge too when I look at this, and it sounds like you guys are too. So, but keep it in perspective. Yeah. So, John, did you want to share?
You know, one of the things.
Too? I'm sorry, Kevin. This is the part I need to learn about too.
No.
I think it's cool to do this.
Yeah, what I also
is
wanted
John
to
still
say
there?
Too is thank. Yeah, I am.
Okay, go
thank
ahead.
Thank you so much for sending out those texts for the challenge, Kim. That has been really helpful.
Oh, good. And you guys, like John's talking about, you know, last week we talked about 27. It was 27 days till spring, and so Becky had put this challenge out that we do want, and hold each other accountable. So what the Let's Start Tribes team have been doing between Andy and Brittany and myself is we send everybody who's jumped on board with that a text each morning and sometimes in the afternoon to just let you guys know that we're thinking of you and working together and keep you on track. So glad you like it, John.
Oh, thank you. It is very inspirational, and quite honestly, it's easy to disappoint myself. I don't want to disappoint you.
Oh, I wouldn't be disappointed. You're trying. I was happy. As long as you're trying and no excuses, we got your back.
All right. I'll get out of the way for other callers, because I know there's probably tons of people who want to talk.
Thanks, John. You have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. We're going to head to Wyoming with Melissa. Hey, Melissa, how are you? As soon as I press the right button.
Hi, Kim.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. All that stuff Kevin was talking about, I actually already knew some of it, because I subscribe to Neutral Living, and they send me all these tips through Facebook. And I already knew about the apple cider vinegar and, you know, avocados and nuts and all that stuff, so I think neutralliving.com is a great resource.
Okay,
excellent.
Great. We'll have to check it out.
And
so what have you tried, Melissa? What have you tried? Have you tried all those things, and what have they done for you?
Oh yes, I'm putting them in my what they like to call them NutriBlast. So I'm putting them in my NutriBlast. And I never felt better in my life since I started doing this NutriBullet thing. I absolutely love it. I'm on my second one, actually, because I think I'm wearing them out. Yeah, and with this, and also Rick is having a lot of good benefits, too. He has a couple of digestion issues, so I found the apple cider vinegar, and that's really helping him, so that's awesome.
Wow.
One of the topics I really, really want to focus on, in fact, I'd like to do a whole show on it, I think we need to, is the digestive system, because there is some new research about it that is absolutely amazing. there are some groups now calling your digestive tract the second brain. And just to give you an idea, you know, we talk about good bacteria and bad bacteria, but to put it in perspective of numbers, your body has about 1 trillion cells of different kinds, skin, hair, teeth, blood, all that stuff. It's all cells. We have about 1 trillion cells in our body. We have 10 trillion bacteria in our body. The bacteria outnumber us 10 to 1 in our own body. And we need to make sure that bacteria stays healthy, and that's all in your gut. There, you know, we've heard all these years about dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, how those chemicals, those brain chemicals, control everything we do. And now what they're finding is that the gut, the reason they're calling it the second brain, is your brain sends messages to your gut, but your gut also sends messages to your brain. And they're starting to believe that the gut actually produces more of those chemicals than the brain does. So not only is the gut controlling our immune system, all of it, virtually all of it, controlling the ability to absorb the nutrients we need, but now they also believe that the gut plays a huge role in mental health. I mean, who's ever heard of something crazy like that? So I want to do a whole show on how we keep that gut healthy, and I'll just give you 2 clues. It is so easy. You need 2 things to keep your gut healthy. You need fiber, and you need good probiotic bacteria. And what is one of the most prescribed group of drugs in the U.S.? Antibiotics. We are trying to take probiotics, 2 totally mm-hmm. different things. We take antibiotics, wow. And it wipes out all of our good gut bacteria. That's why people come off antibiotics sick and tired and constipated and going back and forth from constipation to diarrhea, because those drugs are wiping out all those good bacteria. So probiotics, probiotic foods, if you can get them, supplements if you can't. We always try to get our nutrition from whole food first, supplements if we have to. So good probiotic foods or supplements and fiber, because fiber is what feeds good bacteria. Sugar feeds bad bacteria. So the more sugar we eat, the more we're setting up an environment for bad bacteria. The more fiber we eat, the more we're setting up a good and – oh, and the other thing that – this is kind of crazy. Melissa, I think you know this. What do we use to ferment our vegetables to create that good bacteria?
I actually don't know that. I should have said that, yeah.
That's okay. We use a really salty brine, because in a salty environment, bad bacteria can't live at all, and good bacteria thrives and multiplies. So again, we're back to that salt thing. Should we really be eating a low salt diet? But instead we're eating a high sugar diet, which feeds the bad bacteria, and we need good bacteria to thrive. So we need fiber, that's what they feed on, not sugar, and we need a salty environment. It's almost exact opposite of what we've been told and what we've been doing. And here I go again, blabbing and running on. I'd like to do a whole show just on that topic.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Oh, Kevin, you're a wealth of knowledge, so I'm enjoying listening to you. Just one other thing I wanted to say was the 27-day challenge. I'm participating in that too. And it has been so cold this past week. If it hadn't been for that mm-hmm. challenge, I probably wouldn't have walked at all. But since I said I was going to do it, I did it. I only missed on 2 days, because one day it was 15 degrees outside, and I actually got in 8,200 steps, but then I gave up because it was just too cold. But actually, I overachieved on a couple of days and went over my 10,000, and I averaged it out, and over the past 7 days, I actually averaged 10,300 steps. So I'll take that, because it's been cold.
You did great. You did great. Yeah. You named it and claimed it. Good for you.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Way to go. We'll keep it going. We're going to keep it going for where are we at? We just did this, finished the seventh day, so 20
yep.
more days, you
one
guys. Then we'll keep it going after that.
Yep.
Okay. Keep up the great work, Melissa. Thanks for calling in.
All right.
Have a great weekend. Ah, let's go to John in Wisconsin. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you guys today?
Great.
Very good.
I just wanted to say that the subject that you've got today, yeah, I'm really passionate about. I've been on a no sugar, no grain lifestyle for the last 6 months. I started out at about 250 pounds. I was really overweight, hypertensive. I was type 2 diabetic, and a whole plethora of really bad things with me. Since I went on no sugar, no grain, and more fat, what you were talking about before, I'm now 180 pounds and a 42-inch waist. So,
wow.
Or I mean a 32-inch waist, I'm sorry. And I've dropped all that in 6 months by just going no sugars and no grains.
I have to say I was so guilty of this because I did the wrong research, I tried the wrong things, and I fought against this no grain thing for so long and said I'll never do that, it doesn't make sense, and I got to take it all back because the other thing that I find absolutely amazing, I looked at some of these sites that, you know, recommended these high-quality fats to replace the carbohydrates, not protein. And a lot of them said, look, really, if you do this right, you can eat all you want. You don't have to count calories anymore. And I thought, oh, God, here they go. This is just stupid. You can't do that. But here's what I found. Once I got through that initial getting the sugars out of my body, which included the grains, what I found was my appetite was totally different. It wasn't a craving kind of appetite. I could tell if I was truly hungry or not, and I wasn't hungry nearly as often. And the foods that
correct.
I was eating, these high-quality fats, I would literally, and especially if I, you know, here's just a real quick rule of thumb, because I'm talking a lot about fat and how you can eat. You know, it should be a big part of the diet, but we have to think about volume. Let me talk about that for just a second. We could eat a high percentage of fat in the diet, but fat is extremely dense and caloric. So what I'm talking about when I say a high amount might be really small amounts of food on the fat and protein side, whereas vegetables have almost no calories but tons of fiber. So when you look at the plate the way it should look, it'll literally be about 80% of vegetables by volume, and then the rest in these high-quality fats. And what you find is the fats are so satisfying and the good proteins, and the vegetables are so full of fiber that I understand why they say eat as much as you want. You won't
correct.
Be able to eat enough. You just can't. You get full, you get tired, and you feel great.
Correct. And there is only one book that I would recommend you read. It's called Wheat Belly. And
I've read it.
It's a really
yeah.
good book.
It is, yeah. I agree. And I have to say, though, I was still so ingrained in my thinking and I was so stubborn about it that even after reading Wheat Belly, I just didn't get it emotionally. I understood it intellectually. So, you know, it was a combination of a lot of those types of books. That is an excellent book. It was just this final combination of, you know, something else has got to work. And I finally had that breakthrough myself. And I've heard other people explain it, and I didn't get it.
Well, correct. And also, I would like to say before I leave that, you know, I had tried, I'm in my 50s, I'm 57. I've tried almost every diet known to man as being a truck driver, and nothing ever seemed to work. But this no sugar, no grains, I can find my food out on the road very easily. I can eat at truck stops. I can find my food at Walmart and put it in a refrigerator. I never have any problem finding food out on the road. It keeps me satisfied. I don't eat near as much, and the weight just melts off. I feel so much better. I have no more sleep apnea. It's all gone. My diabetes is totally under control, no pills at all anymore. It's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and you know, something interesting you said, when you talked about all the other things, you actually called them diets. And if you notice, I'm not sure, but I don't think I used the word diet the whole time I was talking. And at the end, you didn't say you were on some sort of a diet. You just said, I now eat these kind of foods.
It's a lifestyle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not a diet. Diets don't work. They never have. The first three words in diet are what? Are the first three letters in
yeah.
die. Die.
Oh, die. I was going to say, I
eat. Yeah. Yeah. No, the first three letters in the word diet are die. We don't want to do diets. We want to change to a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to talk to you later about this, but you guys have a real nice day.
Thanks for calling in, John.
Thank you.
Let's take one more phone call here. We have Tom in PA. Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Kim, today. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Well, so I'm so glad you came on board. What would you like to share with us?
Well, Kevin, when you were saying some things earlier, particularly with the back testing, I have a background from when I was in college in hard science, and something that several of my geology professors when I was in college drummed into my head. A lot of these medical studies that were coming back out in the 90s and early 2000s, they would read through some of them out of curiosity. And then they would look at us and say, if you ever turn in a paper like this to me, I will flunk you out of my class and do everything I can to kick you out of the department. Because the research, what they would do is, and I'm going to pick on one specific study, it's the cell phone study that first came out that related cell phone to brain cancer. And when you read through the study, there was a whole bunch of issues with it, not the least of which was the particular person that they did most of it was an anecdotal evidence study that they were trying to use with the relation of his tumor to his cell phone. The thing they forgot to mention is he worked in either a law firm or a trader where he was surrounded basically by computer monitors that ended up putting out more radiation in his cell phone, and they were all at head level.
Yeah,
so
crazy.
When you started looking into these studies, they looked at one thing because scientists and doctors, theoretically, are not supposed to go in with a preconceived notion. Unfortunately,
right.
They're human. They do. They get this theory. They want to prove it. And once this theory becomes accepted, there's now money involved. So everybody and their brother leaps onto it because that's where the money is. And nobody really wants to disprove it because that's where their funding is. And it's one of those infamous things you've heard a term, publish or perish. So
yeah.
they keep on doing this. And if you go back, another one if you're not familiar with is the early studies on cholesterol. Have been basically that they pretty much based the numbers on for HDL and LDL and all this other stuff. The original study has basically been totally debunked and recanted because it's that bad. I even heard a medical doctor on an interview one day say, yeah, now that we're looking at this, if I turned this into some of my college professors, they would have slapped me around. It was that badly done, but it was accepted. Now they're discovering that there's more to cholesterol than they thought, that actually the bad cholesterol may actually be good for you. And the new theory is based on inflammation rather than cholesterol, as well as your cholesterol particle size being too small. But the problem
exactly.
is when they're looking at these studies, they look at such small segments. They're in a forest. They're not even looking at the trees. They're looking at the leaf that's on the ground.
Right.
And they can't see the tree, let alone the forest. So that's the one thing. Go on.
Yeah, and I am familiar with that cholesterol study, and you're right. To look at it now, it's almost a joke, and yet entire industries and advice and drugs were all built around that study that was so flawed.
And that's, I think, the one thing that we all have. And the other thing, too, is when you see a lot of these studies, that are published. The thing you have to remember, the reason why they're published is for the scientists to review them to say, hey, you know, you're on the right track, or wait, there's a problem here. But the big problem has become the media gets a hold of these studies. They don't understand that the purpose of this is for the scientists or the doctors to discuss them. So now they start publicizing as if they're the gospel truth, because, of course, it's in the New England Journal of Medicine. It must be true, much like if it's on Google, it must be true.
Right.
So the thing is, they're not understanding it. They're not saying it's true. They're saying, hey, I found some interesting data. This is what I think. You guys take a look at it and see what you think. And instead of going through and doing the studies, they're not. So I, first of all, I have to commend you, because you're doing what a lot of professional researchers aren't doing. But the other thing I'm going to kind of add to your back-testing is, like when you're discussing the salt, when you're looking at some of that, you've also got to consider other things too, like exercise levels, like, you know, the changes in the food and diet. Because when you start looking at that whole picture, may give you an entirely different opinion than what you have. And I know we're tight on time, so in a future show, if you like, I can come back and tell about my dad, who was born in 1911. Farm boy, lived that diet you're talking about, and did have some heart problems over the years. But when he finally did pass away of heart disease, it wasn't because of blocked arteries. It was because he had rheumatic fever as a kid that damaged the valves, and by the time they discovered what the real problem was, it was too late to treat it. And
yeah, exactly. And that, those are the kind of things, that the rheumatic fevers and some of those other things that our Western medicine has absolutely improved and helped protect us from. So again, there's some good news here that once we can figure out how to take the good from both, I think we can see some health results that will be pretty amazing. Kim, do you think we should wrap it up?
Yeah. I think, like you said, we could go on for hours talking about this, because it's such good information. It's just awesome. So, Tom, thanks for being on. Kevin, thank you so much. I mean, I think we've just touched the tip of this. And what I hope this did for everybody out there was just get you more curious, to feed your determination and resolve about your health, about a whole you, not just when we're sick and not just when we're trying to get healthy, but get that whole you healthy. And there's just so much I think we can learn together. So next week,
yeah,
Kevin, going to have you back on board?
I'd love to. And I want to leave people with one thing. And this is a really just total overview of this whole topic, is that don't overdo any of this stuff. Even something as simple as drinking water. I want to throw one thing in, because I talked about the gut and getting healthy probiotics in. There's a caveat here. Do it very slowly, because they have identified that if you have really bad gut bacteria now, which most people do, and it really is the start of all these other diseases, we know that most people have bad gut bacteria. If you overload your system with too much good bacteria all at once, it kills off the bad bacteria, which sounds good, that's what we want to do, but it kills off so many of them that when they die, they release toxins. And you will literally overload your body with toxins if you do this too fast. Exercise, drinking more water, breathing better, even the most simple things, do them slowly, and don't make yourself uncomfortable over this. You know,
right.
Some people are going to have to go through some discomfort because they're so far out of whack, but you really want to minimize that. Look, we have lots of time. You know, it took us, some of us, it took us 50 years to get this unhealthy. But, you know, don't try to get healthy in 50 days. You know, you got a lot of time. Take it easy. Try little things and start listening to your body so you learn what's really happening. And with that, I'll shut up.
Yeah. No, that's great. No. And you reminded me, you know, I coordinated Dave Ramsey course at church right now, and we just had the lesson where the guy shared one of the best books that was for his success, and it was The Tortoise and the Hare. So that kind of fit into what you're saying, was go at this with a, you know, it's okay to go at this with a tortoise type of mentality and determination. It's just, you just don't stop. You just keep going forward one step at a time, but not craziness. No craziness.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
leave all the craziness to me. I that's just kind of me. I'll go out and do the stupid stuff like that, and you know, I'll let you know how dumb of an idea it was. So
here we go. Sounds good. Come back and report to us. No, be
right,
careful.
Right.
Okay. Well,
thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. You have a great weekend. So you guys, thanks so much for joining us today. And as you can see, we're so passionate about this because you matter to us. Your health matters to us. Your whole person matters to us. And just want you to be vibrant and enjoy every day. Okay. So until next week, keep moving. Be committed to you. Be a leader out there on the roads and at home in this health journey. Okay. So be healthy. Be fit. We say do the hard work and master this journey to health. Thanks so much, you guys. We appreciate you. Have a great weekend.